Welcome to another episode of Wingin' Motown Radio. I'm your host, Kyle, and tonight we've got JJ and Graham on with us, looking to talk a little bit of Red Wings hockey, even though there's none going on right now. JJ, Graham, how are you both doing?
Every day is another step in a hellish march towards death.
Okay. Wow. Graham, how about you?
I'm a little better than that, I think. It's not just hellish. It's just mind-numbingly. It's a mind-numbing march Heckish. Towards death.
I've slipped into the seventh circle of hell, but you know, that's just it is what it is, right?
It's heckish. I'm it's done. Heckish. Diddly done.
Yeah, we'll go. It's heckish. Frick this. Yeah. So obviously, there's not really that much to talk about in terms of Red Wings. There's been a couple of things come out that we can talk about, but I think what we're really going to jump into first is what the hell went wrong with this team. You know, they weren't good enough. It just seems like against Tampa, they couldn't score more than two goals, and that just really put the kibosh on everything. And Tampa just they found a way out of it. And even though the Red Wings, I mean, I don't know if they had. I mean, if you look at possession metrics and everything like that, it was the Red Wings didn't play bad in that regard, I don't think. And then if you look at the other underlying numbers, you know, the stats would tell you that the Red Wings were just getting very unlucky. But it just seems like they couldn't score a goal to save their goddamn lives. And it just didn't happen. And everything just fell apart. So, I mean, what do you guys think it was? Let's go ahead and say, what was the one thing that damned the Red Wings in the first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning? JJ, why don't you go first, because you're the happiest of all of us.
It was scoring. It would be the biggest thing. And that's the thing. You know, the playoffs are a carnival of small sample sizes, so obviously, like, unlucky will screw you every time. But there comes a point where it's like, this was the Red Wings were like this all season. I mean, they were just not getting shots on net. They were not getting shots through. I think they actually led the league in just like failure to get shots where they were supposed to be in general, where they came to just an applicator on the power play blocking shots that should otherwise either hit the goalie or the net, or Gustav Nyquist just popping it over or around wide open nets. So yeah, I mean, you want to say unlucky, but man, they just got unlucky all damn season long, where the point is, like, at what point are they just bad at shooting the puck?
Yeah, it seemed like they were having trouble, like you said, with Advocator just blocking more shots than generating shots on the power play, which was absolutely just drove me nuts. It just seems like they weren't making the space that they needed to actually get the shots off, like, you know, quality shots. And when they did, they would just freaking, you know, they would send it over the damn net. You know, I saw Mike Green do it, Nyquist did it. It was just like perpetual just pain and suffering all season long, it seems. And it's really unfortunate to see, you know, the team not start to kind of turn around and get that, you know, whether you want to call it luck or mojo or whatever. Because, you know, there was one time in the season when they started to heat up and they were looking really, really, really good. And then it all just kind of came apart. And the power play was a big one, obviously. I mean, their power play was so bad against Tampa. It seems like Tampa had everything figured out. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't make anything happen. And I mean, that was like the whole season. Like, if the Red Wings could have figured out their power play at the right time, well, I mean, I guess they did figure it out at the right time, technically, but, you know, it went limp at the wrong time. And it sucked because they were getting a lot of calls and they weren't able to capitalize on it. So, Graham, what about you?
Yeah, sorry, it was the power play, besides this, I mean, cause it goes hand in hand with the scoring. You know, to me, you can't really pinpoint one moment where they lost the series. But to me, early in game five, they had that fun three. And you just thought, okay, if they just get a goal here, you know, they're going to be in good shape. And they hadn't really played poorly in any of the games, except maybe game two, that one wasn't great. But I mean, the other four games, they played fairly well, but then they stood there for, I don't know, it was almost a minute, I think, and they just passed it around. And I don't think I've ever seen a 5-on-3 power play composed of players who are supposed to be very talented players look so ineffective. Like, you know, normally when it's a 5-on-3 against, it's, you're thinking, oh my God, they're going to score. There's no way they're going to be able to stop it. And I get the complete opposite feeling was they're not even going to generate a chance. I think they had one chance. I don't remember. I think it was Datsuk hit the post or the crossbar, and that was it. It was one chance in a minute of a 2-man advantage. And when they didn't score on that, and then the little bit of power play time they had after that, in my head, I thought it's over. They just, if they can't score given that opportunity in this environment, they could have scored early, taken the crowd out of it, you know, gotten the power play going. Maybe that gives them a little bit of a jolt. Who knows? But, you know, that was it. And then, you know, it's funny. The season basically ended the same way that it just went all season, is that they couldn't score, and then somebody would make a mistake, and it would cost them, and it would just end up in the back of their net, and they weren't good enough to outscore those mistakes that they made. And that's what happened on that winning goal, is they made a mistake and it ended up in their net. And yeah, you know, I mean, lots of blame to go around maybe on the goal, but ultimately they didn't score, so it didn't matter how many mistakes made. They didn't score.
That goal was like the most depressing thing. Like, I don't know what would have been the most depressing thing since, like, before that. That was so, like, when they scored that goal, it was like, you know, not only did the wind come out of my sails, but the entire ship burned and sank, and I died in the ocean alone. It was just bad. It was bad.
It was very reminiscent of, you know, Osgood giving it up to Jamie Baker, except without the crushing disappointment of the expectations attached to that. Not to place blame on Mrazek, because it's funny, when they talked about after, he said he heard somebody say play it. I think somebody attributed it to Erickson saying play it. And then I thought I read another quote where he said somebody said he heard play the puck or move it or something like that. I almost wonder if he got tricked. But I think it was Callahan. Was it Callahan that got the puck behind the net and fed it out front?
Corn,
if I remember correctly. Whoever it was behind the net.
I think it was Callahan. Yeah.
I wonder if Mrazek got tricked. And that's what happened. Mm. But, you know, it kind of felt like that. Like, except, you know, there wasn't the expectation that the Wings were about to go on this run, and they got hugely upset. It was just, no, yes.
That's why putting this playoff loss in a perspective is so difficult, because this is probably the least surprising exit ever. Like, when they got bumped in five by Boston, that was a really frustrating series, and it wasn't necessarily surprising. But after, you know, they hung with Boston and then Datsuk won game one on that one, it was like, then everything just kind of fell apart. But this was like very much, we've seen them all season long, that they can hang with any team for 50 minutes a game, and unfortunately the game is 60 minutes long. So you're just waiting for shit to go wrong. And so in the 5-on-3, when there were essentially four guys standing in a box and one guy off to the side, and they were literally just and nobody was moving. They would just pass it up to one point and then wait for the defenders to get set and then pass it to a different point. And that went on for a good 30 seconds. That was the most angry I've been with the Red Wings in a very long time, because it just looked like, and I hate saying it because, you know, nobody ever knows, but it looks like they had quit on a 5-on-3 power play.
Well, I mean,
it's just, so yeah, we get to the end of game five, and it's like, you just know that this one is... It was really weird, because it got to the point where I'm like, I don't know whether or not I'm honestly rooting for the Red Wings to score here, because game six is going to be painful. And then I'd snap myself out of it, like, oh, of course, I want to see one more game with the Joe for the obvious reason. I want Datsuk to go out at home. But yeah, when that goal happened, it was like, it was definitely wind out of sails, but it wasn't like shocking. It wasn't like, oh no. It was just like, well, shit, that happened. Of course that happened. I was waiting for it.
Yeah, it was a rough, brutal way to go, considering, like, you know, the circumstances and everything and all the chances that the Red Wings were given. And despite that, they actually played not bad. It's just they couldn't score. And when they needed to score, they couldn't score. And when adjustments needed to be made, they were made, and it didn't work out. It worked in, game three, I'm sorry. And it didn't work after that. And, you know, whatever. Go Isles, because I don't know. I really, really hate the Lightning, and they've really learned to not like that team.
That's funny to say that, because in game one, I turned on and it was 1-1, and then Prince scored, and I immediately let out a large cheer and just kind of went, I guess I'm cheering for the, because it was totally involuntary. I mean, it wasn't. Right. It was just I was watching it and thought, I don't know who I want to win. No, definitely Islanders. No, fuck the Lightning. Yep. I'm sick of these assholes. So.
Yeah, and it just makes me even more mad, because, I mean, the Lightning were so beatable. I mean, they really were. And, you know, Bishop really played really well in that last game. He played well for a lot of it, but I just think that the Red Wings, if they could have figured out how to actually make room, they could have really done something there and made a lot more noise, because Bishop really was letting up a lot of rebounds, and they just don't have anything up front. Like, it just... Abdelkader doesn't work on the net front. Like, God, he does not work there. And that's one thing going into next season, you know, and moving on to our next topic, is how do we fix this? How do we write this, you know, this shit ship? Is just, you know, I think that Abdelkader needs to be taken off of that sort of responsibility of standing his ass in front of the net, because, you know, it's easy to stand in front of the net, but, you know, it takes a certain type of hockey sense and skill to be able to know what happens when the puck comes towards the net and at the net, whether it bounces off you or the goaltender. You need to figure out, you need to make that split second decision to get it to somebody who's open, or just, I don't know, smack it in or something. I don't know. And he can't do that. You know, and the Red Wings have been trying to do that for a long time, and, you know, it just, they don't have a Thomas Holmstrom anymore who can just do something like that. So, yeah, I hope David Backes is good at it, because he's going to probably need to do that next year for us.
Well, he is. He won game two for St. Louis with a goal just like that.
I saw that, and I was like,
what a power play.
God damn it. That is exactly what we need.
Like the power play, too. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to give that $6 million a year.
For 5 years.
I totally agree. It's the concept, like, Justin Abdelkader can play on the power play in the down low puck retrieval area, but if he's going to do that, they need to switch out that plan to where he is not necessarily a net front player, where he's more to the side of the net and he's skating out probably just 3 or 4 feet above the crease, not getting in the goaltender's grill so much as he's taking away sight lines, and he's kind of annoying defenders, but it's gotten to the point where, he is blocking as much of the net as the goalie is. You don't need a really big guy to do that. I think that Darren Helm was a better net front guy than Abdelkader was. Riley Shan, too, and Riley Shan's bigger than Abdelkader even, but he seemed to have a sense about him where he was just better at screening the goalie and not blocking shots, so... keep Abdelkader on there for his puck retrieval, but do not tell him you're not Thomas Holmstrom unless you were going to spend all summer long tipping pucks in and studying the goaltender angles and getting miles better at that job. Stay the shit away from the crease.
Yep, and I mean, I even said it before at one point this season. I wasn't completely serious, but I'm semi-serious. Is that I'd rather have Abdelkader maybe in a position where he's shooting the puck. You know, puck retrieval, I think that's probably his bread and butter, but I would rather have him in a position where he is, like, right, you know, in that puck retrieval area, you know, he goes in and gets the puck and maybe just throws it on net at an off angle, or something like that. I don't want him in front of the net anymore. He doesn't do a good job. And I think that's one thing that the Red Wings really do need to focus on, if they're going to fix the power play. And obviously, another thing is that I think that the power play coaching is going to have to change. I think that system needs to be changed. And, you know, I don't think they're going to fire Pat Firstweiler. I think they'll probably put him, like we were talking earlier today, not on the podcast, obviously, but move Firstweiler into the PK duties, because since Granato is leaving for the University of Wisconsin. And then
you know, bring in another guy who can maybe assist with the power play systematics. You know, I don't know if they're, I don't know who is out there that's going to be available. Obviously, you know, the big name coaches are going to land head coaching jobs, but I think that's another thing. I think it really does need to come down to specialty teams for adjustments, and I really do think that it needs to come down to figuring out how to score, because you know, the Red Wings seem to rely on that safe play and that defensive style play, but they don't have really good defensemen, so it's not like it doesn't really work all the time. Graham, what about you? How do you feel about what needs to be fixed?
I mean, I think a lot of the adjustments that we saw that were made about midway through the year, that like there was a point in the during the season where Justin Abdicator was playing on the fourth line, and he actually made a really effective fourth line with Shane and Helm, and you know, he had. He had split up Cronwall and Erickson, and you know, Jeff Blashill had done a lot of things that we had kind of talked about for years, like, hey, you need to do this. And then he went back to kind of what was safe because he was trying to get in the playoffs, and you know, it happens, and that's fine. What I'm hoping is that next year they don't worry about playing safe. And by that, I mean putting guys in positions where they've had success in the past and just hoping that they just replicate that success. What I think really needs to happen is they just need to go with a, I don't want to call it a youth movement, because I don't think that's entirely true. I just think it's a change in, slight change in tactics and personnel and usage, but giving different players, not necessarily youngers, but different players, either more or different responsibility, in the hopes that you sink or swim with them. And if it doesn't work out, for example, I mean, the big name that everybody wants to see play more is Andreas Athanasiou. And the big knock on him is that, well, he's not great enough. He's not great defensively. And, you know, you can't trust him in your own end and so on and so forth. To me, you're not going to develop him defensively if you don't play him. And he's not going to learn how to play sitting on the bench. Now, I get it when you're late in the season and you're trying to make the playoffs. I get going to a guy like Henrik Zetterberg, who's kind of been there before and know what to do. Maybe he doesn't have the physical skills, but he's got the hockey sense. I mean, that hasn't left him. Next year, you give a player like Athanasiou more responsibility, and if it works out, awesome. And if it doesn't, okay. I mean, the only way you're going to learn if you're going to be able to move forward is if you put those players in those positions. And if they fail, they fail. But then you'll know, and then you won't be left with the situation in which I fear is going to happen, which is there's a lot of young talent that needs an opportunity to play, and it's either going to happen in Detroit or it's going to happen elsewhere, and they've lost some players over the last couple of years for nothing. And my fear is that if that continues to happen, and those players they're not lighting it up anywhere, but they could have been role players or depth players or contributors to the team currently, and they're doing so in other cities. If that happens again, the cries for Ken Holland's job, which, I mean, they exist right now, they're going to be deafening if they just continue along this path of just sticking with veterans and plugging in young guys and just hoping that you can get into the playoffs. And you never know once you get in the playoffs, which, you know, unfortunately, if you watch this team this year, you knew. Even if they had beaten Tampa, they weren't going far. So,
yeah.
What I hope is that Jeff Blashill sits down. He's learned. He has to have learned a lot from his first season this year. And now that he's got a season under his belt, you hope that he's able to go to Ken Holland and say, "This is what I want to do. These are the players that I need to do that. Let's do this." You know, and he gets more of a say into how the team is run and kind of how they play and what the lineup looks like.
Yeah, and going on back what you said about younger kids and giving them, you know, bigger roles, and if they do screw up, I mean, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, what do we expect of these, you know, these young players to come in and not make mistakes? I mean, has nobody ever made a mistake before? I mean, it happens. I think that you do need to, and you need to let them learn and not punish them if they make mistakes. I think you kind of need to set it and forget it, really. And, you know, they're not going to learn from the mistakes if when they do make a mistake, they're just, you know,
put out on a deserted island and, you know, basically given no benefit of the doubt. So, that's how I look at it. So you need to believe in what you have, and you need to, like, you know, Blashill always talks about trusting the process and all of that. And, you know, it's usually like when he says that, I kind of roll my eyes, you know. Trusting the process would be put your best players into, you know, like the guys like Athanasiu or, you know, a guy like Yurko maybe, or a guy like Polkanen, put them into a position, set it there, forget it, and let it go. Trust the process. I mean, there's a learning curve. They'll learn. And if they don't, well, what did you lose? Really nothing. I mean, it's not like you're out there. I mean, the Red Wings going into next year, unless they make some really, really big moves in terms of trades, they're not going to be a contender next year, I don't think. Not with the way that the Atlantic is starting to build itself up. You know, so they really need to be conscious of that. They need to start adapting, and because it's just the veteran core is failing right now, and it's not going to work. If it didn't work this year, didn't work the year before, it's not going to work next year either. So, you know, they really do need to, as Jeff Fleischel always says, trust the goddamn process. You know, the process has already been set with guys like Henrik Zetterberg and Datsyuk, and now Datsyuk probably won't be here next season. You know, you need to create a new process, and you need to trust it. And that's that. That's how it's... That's just the bottom line for me. JJ, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I was just waiting my turn.
You can always jump in. You can always jump in and yell at me.
No, I agree. It's concept of what I'd like to know happened, and we're never going to know this, but I would like at some point for Jeff Blashill to approach Athanasiu and go... Listen, kid, you're going to be my number two center next season. I want you to spend this summer preparing for that. And I wanted to go to Dylan Larkin and say, Dylan, you're going to play center next year. You need to work on your faceoffs, get better at that, prepare for this responsibility. And then he needs to go to Zetterberg and say, I want you to be my shutdown third center. I don't know if he's going to do that. I don't think that they're at a point there, but... you know, he needs to go to Cronwall. You know, get your knee right and be honest with me when we start camp. If you're gonna have mobility issues, I'm gonna need to know as soon as possible. And just set up to trust the kids, to, you know, stick with it and go with their system, the more aggressive defense that jumps into plays a little bit more, and just be willing to go with the growing pains associated with that, because we can't afford to have this. And this is one of the things that Ken Holland was talking about, is like, this was kind of the first year where he felt like literally they were just not good enough. He had talked about the previous year when he went out and got Cole and Zidlitsky, and then shit just kind of fell apart. Like, Ablicator got hurt, Cole got hurt, Franzen got hurt, and it kind of left them without any size up top, and, you know, just other shit kind of happened, where they were still, had things gelled better the previous year, they really could have been a contender, and I honestly believe that too. But this year, they just could not get shit together. So this next season coming up has got to be, our plan is going to be to give this team an identity, or to find out what the team's identity is going to be. This is what I want it to be. This is what I'm going to set up to be. If it's not looking like this, then we're going to suffer through that all season long, because we can't afford to go chasing shit just to limp into the playoffs. If this team is right, not going to be the team that has the vision that Jeff Blashill wants to implement, then we need to know that, and we need to get ready to go through some real lean shit. Because if the team does need to go through anything resembling a rebuild, Ken Holland says, I'm not going to rebuild, that takes 8 to 10 years. He's fucking lying there. But, and then he even hesitated to use the word reload, because essentially he's been using that for the last few years. And I think he thinks that fans are just getting tired of it. So there's not really another word for it, but fuck it, it's another reload. I don't think that they need to tank. Although I would be real willing to, before December gets here this year, to say, okay, we're not tanking, but we're not really going to mind being a lottery team this one year.
Yeah.
You don't need to go through a total restructuring, but... if shit hits the fan, give all the kids as much playing time as you can get, and see if you can get a nice young pick.
Yeah, and I mean, when we're talking about fixing it, since we, you know, we've talked a little bit about systematics and stuff, going on to that topic of trades, which Ken Holland was very adamant that he's going to be more aggressive this offseason, which is both enlightening and completely terrifying to me. I mean, what would be a couple of, you know, key moves to get, you know, let's say realistic moves? You know, obviously you've got guys like Howard, Jimmy Howard, who could, he's probably going to get shopped. You are probably going to shop a player like Thomas Tatar. You are probably, I would hope, try and shop, I think they're going to try and obviously they're going to try and get rid of Pavel Datsyuk's contract if he doesn't come back. That's going to be something, you know, that needs to happen in order to make shit, you know, to give yourself more flexibility when it comes down to, you know, free agency. You know, even though the free agency isn't all that sexy this year, it's, what would be some key moves? And I mean, you know, I just rattled off a couple of names, but are there any other names, you know, that come to mind for you guys that could potentially bring something that the team needs, whether it be, a capable number two defenseman or a capable scoring forward? You know, I mean, is there anything that you could trade that could possibly, you know, that you could trade for something that you could acquire? Like, what would you do, you know, right off the bat? And Graham, do you have anything? Do you have any ideas there?
I mean, moving Howard, I think, is probably the number one priority. And the reason I say that is that when you listen to his locker room comments, he talked about, you know, if you get traded or something, it's not a new idea. And I'm sure it's probably been broached to him that, hey, you know, we might look to move you in the off season. He's got a no trade clause as well. So, I don't remember what the actual terms of it are, but I mean, he's going to have some say into where he goes, and he's going to want an opportunity to be the starter. And he had the opportunity late in the season, and he wasn't bad. I mean, he kind of helped the team get into the playoffs, but you know, in the playoffs when they kind of needed just a little bit better goaltending, and I don't believe they lost that series because of Jimmy Howard. But he's not good enough to steal a series. So I think if you can move him and get at least most of it, because I think if you do move Howard, you might have to retain a little bit of money in that deal, which would be fine. That's going to be one. The other one is going to be moving Datsyuk's cap hit off the books if he does indeed decide that this is it. I know that they have the ability to kind of hold on to it for a year if they need to, because it's only one more year. And honestly, that actually might be a nice built-in little excuse as to why you're maybe going younger is, hey, we've got this $7.5 million off the cap that we can't get rid of. You know, it's just dead space. Ooh, what are we going to do? I guess we got to fill it with young players. I think actually people would be okay with that. But if they can find a taker for that cap hit and get rid of Howard's contract, and they're going to have to give up a little something to go with Datsyuk's cap, because nobody's just going to take that contract for nothing. I mean, it's naive to that somebody's just be like, yeah, totally, no, we'll totally help you out, we'll take that cap hit, and cool. They'll have to throw in a young player. Honestly, if it were me personally, I'd throw in Palkkinen.
That's the one that I think that's the one I've been mulling over the most.
So I would throw in Teemu Palkkinen with Pavel Datsyuk's cap hit. Polkinen's young enough. He's only 24. He's an RFA, so he's mega cheap. I mean, he's got no value, so it's not like he's going to earn some sort of huge raise or anything like that. He has offensive upside in the right system. He could really flourish. Maybe the Wings are just done with him. He's the type of player that the Wings could lose, and I don't think it would be crushing. And if you can do that to get rid of a $7.5 million cap hit that frees you up in a year where a guy like Stamkos is going to be a free agent, and there are several rumors linking the Red Wings to him, at least as a potential suitor, I think you have to do that to make that team better. Because even then, if you don't get a guy like Stamkos, if all of a sudden you've got, say with retained salary, $11 million of cap space all of a sudden, that is a shit ton of flexibility to do a lot of things.
Right.
You can go, it gives you trade opportunities. You really can play around with a lot of that money. So
yeah, the double-edged
those to me are the two biggest things to move.
The double-edged sword of that kind of money is if you're able to move Pavel Datsyuk's cap hit and say it's going to cost you Teemu Pulkkinen to clear that $7.5 million, are the Red Wings in a position at that point to say, okay, we got to spend for the cap, and while we're spending for the cap, we might as well be going for it? Because that's the kind of the purpose of spending to the cap, isn't it? We expect to be a contender. We are spending up to the assumed $74 million cap. We moved Pavel Datsyuk's contract out specifically to give us room to spend that. I mean, obviously, yeah, you get Stamkos, and this is not a transition year anymore. This is we got a new guy, we're building around him, let's move it. But, like, if they trade Datsyuk away and don't end up with Stamkos, and, like, don't end up, like, near the cap, I'd kind of rather just trade Pulkkinen for something else other than let's just get rid of Datsyuk's contract. By the way, Jimmy Howard's no trade is a 10-team no-no list. He can deny up to 10 teams on that NTC.
I'm sure that if it came down to it and he said, hey, we're going to get you a spot somewhere where you're going to be a starter, I'm pretty sure he would waive that list and it wouldn't matter, though. I think he would waive it, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think so, too.
If you think about it, if you are able to move Pavel Datsyuk's contract, you might bite the bullet on Pulkkinen or whatever. You might even bite the bullet on a guy like Yurko, because he doesn't sound like he's very happy with the team right now, according to reports. But if you can move that, then yeah, I mean, the first thing you got to do is you just got to throw the checkbook at Stamkos, and if that doesn't work out, if you can't do that, you might be able to get a guy like Kyle Okposo, who could play on Larkin's wing or something, which I think would be great. I really like Kyle Okposo. I mean, he's not like an elite goal scorer like Steven Stamkos, but you know, he certainly would be a nice acquisition.
He's a better advocator.
Yeah, he's a better advocator who is actually much better advocator. I think, you know, another trade for me is, I mean, I personally think that they're going to try and shop a guy like Thomas Tatar. And in that case, if you're shopping a guy like Thomas Tatar, you know, who is a guy who's proven that he can score, that better bring back some sort of defensive help. I want to say, like, it should be Tatar for a guy like Sami Vatanen or something like that, something rather. I'm fine with that. It just has to bring a player, an NHL player that can step into the lineup and contribute every night. Because I mean, really, I love Thomas Tatar. I think he's a great player, but I don't give a shit. Like, if it brings us something that gives us a guy that can play every night and play big minutes and take some stress off of a guy like Zetterberg or a guy like Cronwall, Eriksson. And then, yeah, I don't even bat an eye. I don't even worry about it. Goodbye. That's just me. And they really do need to get out there, and they need to get they need to get some sort of defensive help. They need to stay away from re-signing a guy like Kyle Quincy. So
yeah, I mean, it sucks because I feel like Tatar and Nyquist are not the same player, but they kind of feel like the same player anymore.
Right.
And while it'd be nice to keep both of them, if you can move them for some real defensive help, then yeah, I think you've got to do that. As far as what's realistic, I don't know, because this is kind of brand new territory as far as Ken Holland is concerned. Right. I'm just worried that he's going to bring Kyle Quincy back because he talked at length about size, and that's what he's going to want. Vatanen isn't really a big guy, is he?
No, he's not.
But I mean, if you could and I don't know if this is going to happen because it's not like Winnipeg is hurting for cap space, but if you can possibly get like a Jacob Trouba, then yeah, I think that would be a great move. And if you have to spend Tatar plus more assets for that, on a deal that would make sense. I'm not saying it's not necessarily just Tatar plus more for Trouba, but whatever it is. The thing that throws the monkey wrench in the defenseman trade market is there's not a lot of them out there. Plus, Peter Chiarelli said today Edmonton's got the number 4 overall pick, and he told the press that he would be very, very willing to move that number 4 overall pick for a good defenseman. And so, whatever Detroit is going
yeah.
to aggressively offer in the trade market has to be more attractive than a number four overall pick in this draft. And I know they say this is essentially a three franchise player draft, and so the number four could go to any one of like six guys. But still, that's a very valuable pick, and I'm not sure that Thomas Tatar qualifies for that. So I don't know what's going to happen realistically. There's so many things that are moving out there. I do think that Howard gets traded. We've talked a lot about Calgary being a potential destination. I think Carolina is kind of a dark horse destination. They're still kind of a goalie away from competing, and they've got Cam Ward falling off. Somebody brought up, and I don't remember who the hell it was, but that the Islanders may be looking at Howard. They've got Thomas Greiss starting in the playoff for them.
It was Elliot Friedman in his 30 thoughts. He said that the thought was that with Thomas Greiss playing so well in the absence while Halak's hurt, did that close the door on the potential idea of Jimmy Howard going to the Islanders? Because, I mean, he's not from there. He's from New York.
He's from New York, so I mean, he's basically, I think he's closer to, actually from closer to Buffalo than anywhere else, but it doesn't matter. Buffalo is not going to want Jimmy Howard. But yeah, if something could be worked out with the Islanders, and I don't know what makes sense there. I mean, it may even involve the rights for Okposo, because I do think that if that one of the things that that Ken Holland is definitely going to want to get is a big forward. Whether it be Okposo or David Backes. Radulov kind of counts because he's not like a real tall, imposing guy, but he plays a very physical game. He is very hard to move off the puck. If you've never seen Radulov play, he was basically Tarasenko before Tarasenko was. And I think he still might be able to do it. Plus, it fits that, like, Radulov is 30 years old and Ken Holland just does not trust anybody. Because that was one of the things he said in his... Like, it used to be, nowadays 32 is old, and it used to be that we'd build the entire team around guys that were older than that, because that was what good. I think that Ken Holland still truly believes that 30 years old is still, like, young and has a ton of years left, because he got spoiled by, like, a whole string of guys who defied that.
Yeah, for sure, and that's really interesting. And I'm glad that you brought up Radulov, because there's been so much chatter about the Red Wings having his, at first the report said that Radulov had the Red Wings on his short list or whatever, as long as whatever. He just wants to come to the NHL at this point. And then, you know, more reports came out that the Red Wings were kind of doing their due diligence there and reaching out to his teammates over in Russia and making sure that he had his head on straight and he wasn't, you know, the shit pest that he has been in recent years. I spoke with a couple of people over in Russia who watch CSKA, and from what I hear is that Radulov is indeed a different type of player nowadays. And some people say it has to do with the fact that he had a kid. Others say that it has to do with the coaching that he had, you know, because their new coach came over. They hired him 2 years ago, and he's really kind of taken on a different role and a different mindset. So, I mean, if he has his head on straight and, he's not going to be some sort of, jerk off in the locker room or, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't care if he's an asshole on the ice. That's great. As long as he's not being an asshole to, you know, the players around, like on his team. You can be as mean to other players as you want. I just, you know, I actually think it would be great to see a guy who would, that's one thing I do like about Radulov is that he is a very emotional player, and he will, when he gets angry, he will step onto another level. It was like how Johan Franzen was. When he would get mad, he just turned into this like cyclops of hockey and kick a bunch of ass. So, and I would be okay with that. But the thing is the way I look at it is, it needs to be a 1 year or 2 year deal. Like, that's it. It needs to be a show me deal. It's like, show me that you have gotten your shit together and, you know, you want to play here and you're going to contribute in more ways than just producing on the ice. And, you know, then, after that, you'll know where you're at. If you want to sign him as a veteran and, you know, sign him for a few more years, then go for it. And if it doesn't work out, then peace out, you know, have fun wherever you want to go. So,
yeah, the thing with Radulov is that I think that a lot of the downsides, like the risks associated with with signing him that a lot of people are bringing up. And nothing is going to solve the, if you get Radulov, you're definitely not getting Stamkos, and we could have Stamkos. So I'm going to maybe stupidly trust that essentially if Ken Holland signs Radulov, he already knows that Stamkos was not going to happen. So everybody will believe whatever they want to believe, and I'm not necessarily sure that I believe that in the first place. However, if you sign Radulov, the worst-case scenario is that Radulov has not learned his lesson, that he is going to be this, like, this huge pain in the ass for a second-year coach where there's already questions about how much control over the locker room Blashill has. He's going to clash with the so-called Swedish mafia, and everything is going to be just a gigantic shit show in Detroit this season. And honestly, I do see that concern. Yeah. If it happens, though, I fucking welcome it with open arms.
Yeah, it's definitely something that it could help them either way. It really could.
Yeah, because if the Red Wings are a circus show next season and things go terribly to shit, then everything that's been going on will see the light of day. And if it's shit that is that terribly wrong inside the Red Wings locker room right now, and then you bring another guy in and it goes even more wrong, then there's no way to lie your way out of that. There's no way to deny that shit has gone terribly wrong and that you've got to fix it. And at least at that point, you've admitted you've got the problem and you can start taking the right steps.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And what you said was perfectly valid. And I think I'm cool with it. And I also think that if you trade Pavel Datsyuk's contract and you trade Jimmy Howard, why not just go for both Stamkos and Radulov? There you go. Let's get weird. Let's go crazy.
I also want to believe that Datsyuk and Radulov would be a package deal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I'd be cool with that. I think that would be fun to watch, despite whatever happens next season. I would welcome that with open arms, mainly because you'd have Pavel Datsyuk staying, and then you'd have him playing with a countryman, a veteran countryman. Maybe that could be good.
I look forward to a line of Datsyuk, Radulov, and Darren Helm.
You're an ass.
Brought back for 6 years at $3.5 million per.
Yeah. Abdulkader light.
I think see you without hands.
Well, speaking of Athanasiou, who is a young player, as always, Michelle has a wonderful prospect report for you this week. So we're going to toss it over to Michelle, and she's going to tell us all about the Griffins, who are moving into who have swept the first round and are going into the second round. And we look forward to that because who doesn't love AHL hockey when your team was eliminated from the NHL playoffs? So thank you so much, Michelle. Go ahead, take us away.
The Grand Rapids Griffins brought out their brooms and they swept the Milwaukee Admirals in 3 games in the first round of the Calder Cup playoffs. The Griffins took Game 1 in Milwaukee by a score of 3-1, Game 2 by a score of 2-1, and then headed home to the Van where they swept in Game 3 by a score of 4-1. There were two names that we heard a lot of offensively for the Griffins in these first 3 games, and it was very nice to hear Anthony Mantha and Tyler Bertuzzi scoring goals and putting up points. Mantha and Marty Firk lead the team in points in the playoffs with 4 each, Mantha with 3 goals and an assist, and Firk with a goal and 3 assists. And Tyler Bertuzzi also notched 3 goals, as did Ryan Spruill and Eric Tangrady. So far, I would say Anthony Mantha, Marty Firk, Tuzzi, and Ryan Spruill have all had a fantastic playoffs. There was, of course, a lot of chatter when Mantha got sent back down from the Red Wings earlier in the season, and comments that Coach Blashill had said he wasn't a superstar. While he's gone back to the AHL and he has performed very well, putting up points and showing that he wants to play in the NHL. 2 of his goals that he scored in the first round actually went through the net. The Griffins will start the second round of the Calder Cup playoffs against the Lake Erie Monsters this Thursday, May 5th, after having 9 days off in between series. The Toledo Walleye were knocked out of the first round of the playoffs in a Game 7 loss against the Reading Royals, and consequently, the Griffins called up Jake Patterson, defenseman Joel Schwinard, and side forward AJ Jenks to a tryout. Those 3 guys will at least travel with the team team, in addition to Evgeny Svechnikov and Joe Hicketts, who are also both traveling with the team after their CHL teams were eliminated. The Red Wings have also reassigned Andreas Athanasiou to the Griffins, and he'll join them for the second round, which should be a big boost. The Griffins will face off against the Columbus Blue Jackets AHL affiliate in the second round, and they'll definitely be watching for their offense. The Monsters scored 5 goals in each of their first 3 games as they swept their first round opponent, the Rockford Icehawks. With the names like Oliver Bjorkstrand, Alex Broadhurst, Zach Werenski, Sonny Milano, and Dylan Hetherington on the team, it's no surprise that they have a bit of offense. The Griffins' defense is going to have to do an expert job at not only playing defense, but also clearing things away from Tom McCullum, who will probably start in net for these games as well. In net for the Monsters will be Jonas Korpisalo, who has so far posted a .924 save percentage in the 3 games of the Calder Cup playoffs. The Griffins will likely continue with Tom McCullum in net, as he's played the first 3 games, and he has a .968 save percentage and a 1 goals against average in the 3 games so far. However, I will say, he's had some shaky moments where he hasn't looked great, but the defense has done a fantastic job of clearing rebounds, clearing people away from him, and allowing him to see shots. And they're definitely going to have to keep that up. Lake Erie has the home ice advantage, so they'll host games 1 and 2. It'll be this Thursday, May 5th, and then Saturday, May 7th, before the next 2 games come back to Grand Rapids, Sunday, May 8th, and Tuesday, the 10th. The second round and all consecutive rounds in the playoffs are now 7 games. As I mentioned earlier, the Toledo Walleye were knocked out of the playoffs in the first round, losing 4-1 in Game 7 against Reading. It was a bit disappointing given how well their regular season went and how good the team played. It's hard to see such a good team go out in the first round, and yet it was a hard-fought round, and the entire team certainly has a lot to be proud of this season. Jake Patterson ended up playing 3 of the 7 games in the playoff series, posted an .873 save percentage, and had 2 wins and 1 loss. He won't see any time playing with the Griffins the rest of the playoffs, but he is traveling with the team. In the CHL, Adam Marsh remained sidelined with an injury for the remainder of the St. John Sea Dogs playoffs. The Dogs lost in 5 games to Shawinigan in the third round of the playoffs, and Marsh's team was the last rooting interest of Red Wings fans to get knocked out. Evgeny Svechnikov and the Cape Breton Screamin' Eagles lost in 7 games to Adam Marsh's St. John Sea Dogs before Svechnikov was assigned to the Griffins. Out in the Western Hockey League, Joe Hicketts and the Victoria Royals were eliminated in a heartbreaking 3-2 overtime loss in Game 7 of the second round of the playoffs to the Kelowna Rockets. He was also then assigned to the Griffins shortly thereafter. With plenty of Red Wings prospects making it to the playoffs, it was a little bit sad to see most of that come to an end, with one after another being eliminated. However, Christopher N. and the Frölunda Indians are the SHL champions after beating the Holmstrom-less Schleftia in 5 games in the finals. N. had 1 assist in that series, but did play an important role in his team's win. And it was exciting to see a Red Wings prospect actually win a championship. So with N out of the playoffs after being the champ and the rest of the Red Wings prospects eliminated, it's down to just the Griffins now who are in the playoffs and still playing hockey. All Red Wings eyes are on those Griffins now and the young players who are performing. It should be an exciting second round series, and if you have an opportunity to go watch either on the road in Lake Erie or at the Van in Grand Rapids, do it. Go and see these kids play while you still have a chance. It's probably your last chance to see a guy like Andreas Athanasiou before he gets to the NHL. And some of these kids are either going to be gone or promoted next year. So go enjoy some hockey, scout out the kids who are the future of the Red Wings, and just enjoy some playoff hockey. Until next time, that's what's going on in the world of Red Wings prospects.
Thank you so much, Michelle, as always, for your awesome prospect report. You are a scholar and a saint, and I hope that you have a wonderful week. So we're going to hop right into reader questions, as always. We are going to let our favorite monster, JJ, field the questions. Doesn't look like there's that many this week. Looks like we had a late mailbag, but that's okay. We're still going to make the most of it. No Duck Tang Grady questions, it looks like. So it's going to be a good... It's going to be a good episode from here on out. JJ.
Yeah, hi. No Duck Tang Grady, no FMKs. A lot of people answering questions in the mailbag post. Thank you for trying to do our jobs, but no Dick Nipples.
Thank God.
So, Holmstrom 96 starts us off with, I'm sure you're going to cover this, but how do I come to terms with Erickson being on the team next year?
You just do. deal with it.
Favorite alcohol, you know, whatever your favorite alcohol drink of choice is.
I suggest Four Roses single barrel.
That is some good stuff.
When it's a four.
Weller is also very good.
I like Weller, yes.
That was very good.
No, it's for Erickson. So Google how to make Pruno and do that.
Just pour boiling bleach into your eyes whenever he goes on the ice, and you'll be fine.
Drink a nice toilet wine. No, honestly, the concept with how to deal with Erickson on the team is you've got to learn how to be entertained while watching the Red Wings. And my trick for being entertained while watching Erickson is knowing that I am not anywhere close to the single most angry red and nude online person about Erickson ever. So you go find that person and you just laugh at that, just at their response to literally every single thing Erickson does, because the continued bewilderment about why he's on the team, because we're all bewildered about it, but like the angry, like, I'm going to shave off my own eyebrows so they won't catch fire, that's how I get through it. So CK03, is this the year for the Sharks?
It should be. I mean,
you know, you look at who's left that you would immediately take without question in a 7-game series over the Sharks right now.
Yeah, it's...
See, the hesitation right there says, you know what? It could be Chicago and L.A. getting knocked out. I mean, they knocked L.A. out, so, you know, congratulations. Yeah. Kudos to them. They deserve that. But Chicago getting knocked out, I think, was huge because it opened up the West. Now that Chicago and L.A. are out, the West is... I mean, any one of those... Well, not Nashville. They're done. But Dallas, St. Louis, San Jose, not a single one of them being in the Stanley Cup Final will surprise me, based on who's left.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I think that... I mean, personally, as I'm saying this right now, I think we could really, really see a Pittsburgh San Jose Stanley Cup final, and I think that'd be fun as hell.
Yeah, see, and on the flip side to the, like, there is not a team where you can without hesitation say they will beat the Sharks, is that other than Nashville, there's not another team where you can say the Sharks would destroy them.
No. It feels like of the 8 teams that are left, take out Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could really make a case for any one of them being in the finals. Maybe not winning, but being in the finals. I think whoever wins between Washington and Pittsburgh represents the East. I feel like that's your East right there, because they're both better than Islanders and Tampa. Now, if Tampa gets Stroman and Stamkos back, if they can advance past the Islanders and get those two back, and Bishop keeps playing well, that might change my pick a little. But as long as Stroman and Stamkos are still out, once they play a team with the kind of depth that Washington and Pittsburgh and San Jose and Dallas and whoever that they can kind of throw at them, I think they're in some serious trouble. Because the Islanders are a one-line team pretty much, too, just like the Red Wings were. The difference is their line scores.
Yeah, true. See, and I'm worried with the Pittsburgh-Washington series is who's going to be left alive after that. It's already, like, getting pretty nasty. It has that feeling of when Detroit faced off against the Ducks and basically didn't have enough health to keep going. So, like, I think that either way, Pittsburgh and Washington is going to be weaker from having played the other one in the second round.
Right.
And they're going to be ripe to get picked off. I think if they make it past the Atlantic champion, then they've got a real good shot. But yeah, I mean, literally anybody except for Nashville and the Islanders, I think that, yeah, there's a real decent chance, and I'm kind of looking forward to it. Honestly, I don't want the Sharks to go beyond the conference finals, but if they do, I'm not going to be terribly torn up about it. I think the Ducks have taken the choker label from them and rammed it down their throats pretty far.
Yeah, I would like to see the Sharks do, because I really like Joe Thornton and I like Brent Burns, and I'd like to see them do it. I don't really, I like, oh yeah, Donskoy. I like that guy too. He's really great. I remembered his name this time.
How about Turney and Donskoy? I really like them as a pair.
Turney is good. They have a lot of good players, like a lot of low-key good players on that team. And I think it's funny because DeBoer was like kind of made out to be this awful coach because he coached the fucking New Jersey Devils, who are just perpetually bad.
Yeah.
But he's done a hell of a job I mean, he really has. So
I will say I do not like Joe Thornton. I'm still mad at him for the diving shit antics for when we met them in the playoffs.
Okay.
I think he is more likable than I thought years ago, but still I don't necessarily want him to be happy, but I will take it over, like, I take the Sharks over the Blues. So
Yeah, for sure. Well, see, here's the flip side though. I wouldn't mind the Blues making more noise in the playoffs because I really like Ken Hitchcock. So I don't know. I just really hate the Red Wings. That's all I really know right now.
The super hateable teams are done. That's Chicago and Los Angeles.
Yep.
Were like the devil. Don't let them win, please. Please, Lord. But I can find reasons to be happy about literally every team remaining.
For sure. And if the Blues lose, then Hitchcock will probably get fired, and then he can come coach the power play.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen, people. I'm joking.
All right, Operator Z wants to know. He says, assuming no offseason acquisitions and Helm is not re-signed, that leaves the Wings with three NHL experienced centers, Zetterberg, Riley, and Glendening. Does AA or Larkin or Mantha or some other option slot in a center next year? Who and why? Mantha definitely is going to be a winger.
Mantha's a winger.
I think that their plan is that Larkin is going to be a center next season. I don't think that they intended to make him a winger for his entire career.
I would hope not.
And I'd like Athanasiu to be a center as well.
I've been on my soapbox about moving Larkin to center, but I like that they kind of just, you know, eased him in this year. You know, they tried him at center a couple times. It didn't really work out. But I think in the offseason, they should really be going to him and saying, hey, you need to work on your faceoffs. You need to work on, you know, being, you know what NHL competition is like. Now you need to get ready because we're going to throw you in a center position and we're not fucking moving you. The training wheels are off, bud.
Yeah, I'm okay to the point of moving Glendening and Sheahan to wing if we
have. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And plus, I mean, we're going to bring Brad Richards back too, so there's another.
Fuck you, JJ.
No, he talked this, like, the Daniel Wakiji on the Red Wings site posted an article talking to him, and it really sounded like he was going, like, considering hanging him up. He says he's going to take.
Yeah, it did sound like, yeah.
Well, I mean,
or at least taking a year off, it sounded like.
I got to imagine it was probably tough. I mean, he was on the Rangers. They went to the finals. He was on Chicago. He won a cup. Then he comes to Detroit, and you know, I mean, he's played a lot of hockey over the last couple of years. I'm sure he's probably exhausted, and he's won cups now. Oh, and he's really kind of done everything. I mean, what else is Brad Richards really going to do at this point in his career? He's going to be a third or fourth line center. He's going to sign 1-year deals. Maybe wins a cup, maybe he doesn't. And he's probably wondering, you know, unless I can get the right situation, it's just going to be a one and done. Maybe it's time.
Yeah, unless it's on a cup contender, then yeah, just screw it, dude. Just hang out with your kids and I don't know, drink whiskey or something. Just
go perfect your animal mother from Full Metal Jacket cosplay because you look just like him. Arbitrary and Capricious says, happy thoughts. Can you describe in detail all the ways in which the upcoming expansion draft will save this team by undoing Kenny's poor long-term decisions? Jason kisses all over that immediately by reminding him that you can only take one player from
each
team.
It's not like
I mean, that.
Yeah, it's not like it's open season on every contract that is left unprotected. The best case scenario is that, you know, they don't protect Erickson and that he gets taken. But I still don't think, I mean, you know, there's going to be other players for the Red Wings that are unprotected. And I just don't think that Erickson is going to be a very lucrative option from the Red Wings.
Yeah, I mean,
I could be wrong.
They're going to lose. Probably, I know everybody thinks Erickson's going to get picked. My fear is that, first of all, that they'll protect him for some stupid, weird reason. But if they leave him unprotected, my fear is that he won't get picked because of the contract. I don't know why. Yeah. I mean, an expansion team, they're going to need to get some high dollar players in order to hit a salary cap floor. So, I don't know. There's just a small part of me that thinks that if they pick some from the Red Wings, the Red Wings won't be able to protect everybody. So is a player like Thomas Yurko going to get unprotected? And if so, yeah, I mean, he would be, he'd get snapped up in a heartbeat. Should be anyway from an expansion team. So that's my fear. I don't know that it's going to take care of the long-term mistakes that Ken Holland has made. I mean, only Ken Holland can really do that. And he's going to have to do that by kind of eating some crow and biting some bullets a little bit. But, maybe they could lose. Maybe they can lose a big ticket contract. Maybe they can lose Abdelkader.
Maybe. See, I never thought about that. I think that losing Abdelkader in expansion draft would be bad because I think Abdelkader has more value than just tossing out an expansion draft. What I was going to say would be probably the best case scenario there is they make a deal with the Las Vegas Butt Wranglers to, that's the team name, to take, you take Erickson and we will give you a better deal on Abdelkader. You still have to give us something for Abdelkader, but we will trade him to you as long as you take Erickson in the expansion draft.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
I can see it happen. I mean, look at when it was Nashville. They took Doug Brown and immediately traded him back to the Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those kind of deals happen all the time. Hey, take this player, trade him back, and then we'll give you this player. Or we'll give you this pack of players or something. You know, stuff like that happens.
Holmes from 96 asks about where Howard is going to go, which we already answered, but Peak 7 kind of kicks over the basically who is going to be the backup. Do we have a Grand Rapids goalie to bring up? Are we calling up Caro to back up Mrazek next year? Are we going to like try to sign Cam Ward to a cheap contract? Somebody mentioned earlier that there's a possibility of trading Howard for Antti Niemi in Dallas. And it's not ideal because Antti Niemi makes about $700,000 less and has one less year on his contract. But that's something that would be tenable.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting one. And I don't know Niemi's contract terms off the top of my head. What does he have, 2 more years left or is it 1 more year?
Two more.
So, I mean, and he gets paid, what, $700,000 less than Howard?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would have to be an absolute, like, last resort for me. Because personally, I think if you can trade Howard's contract, if you don't want to sign a free agent goalie, then, I mean, Jared Caro is, he's got the NHL build. He's done really well since having a rough start in the AHL and the ECHL. Why not? I mean, you know, if Mrazek is the bona fide future goaltender, the dude should be starting at least 60 goddamn games a season. So, I mean, why not? But, I mean, if there was no suitors for it and you absolutely needed to move that contract and you would assume 2 more years of just a veteran goaltender, if it was a last resort thing, then sure. I mean, you free up a couple of years later down the line, so why not?
Yeah, I think we go to the consideration of them. Maybe you can also flip him. It'll be like the reverse of the guy who traded a paperclip and got a house. Like, you trade Howard down for Niemi, you trade Niemi down for, like, one other guy who's a little cheaper until you end up with, like, a nobody as a bad con. Like, you get Garrett Sparks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, like I said before, that should be something that could be considered, but certainly something that should be, it needs to be a last resort. Like, and personally, I don't think Nil does it, so.
Let's see, Make the Red Wings Great Again is a very good username, but he asked about what we're going to do with the draft, and we already talked about that, so I just wanted to read that username out.
Oh, okay.
Datsuki and Freak, free agents that are appealing other than Stamkos. We did talk about Stamkos, we talked about Radulov, we talked about David Backes and Kalaposo. Is there anybody else out there?
Louis Eriksson?
Eriksson.
I mean, he worked.
I think he's going to want too much term.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
but I don't know. I think once you get past the top, there's a depth out there that I think could be pretty good. I mean, the RFA market is much more intriguing. Except nobody ever signs RFAs, so it won't matter.
Yeah,
but. It was funny. If the Wings hadn't gotten Mike Green last year, I would have said Brian Campbell would have been a choice. Maybe bring him in a 1 or 2 year deal. But with Mike Green in the when they already have Mike Green, he would be redundant. So.
Oh fuck! That's absolutely going to happen, dude. You know,
Alex Goligoski is going to be an unrestricted free agent.
No thanks. even though it probably would absolutely happen, but I honestly think like if he wasn't about to demand so much, I wouldn't mind Louis Erickson. I think that a lot of the work he did with the Bruins this season was sitting in front of the net. So, I mean, I'll bet you any money that they're going to try and they'll consider it, and they'll probably try and kick tires on him. So,
yeah, Eric Stahl, Steven Weiss, Milan Lucic,
Steven, okay,
Keith Yandel.
Yandel's another one. So Yandel is one that I feel like you'd basically just be bringing in a left-handed Mike Green. So he's going to want, I think, over, you know, at least $6 million a year. And if they didn't have Mike Green, then maybe. But, you know, I'm not saying Keith Yandel's a bad defenseman by any means. He was certainly he was probably the best defenseman outside of Ryan McDonough for the Rangers. And I think the Rangers are going to try and re-sign him. But, he's going to be, what, 30 or something like that? So, you know, defensemen seem to age quicker than forwards do sometimes. So
Dan Boyle's a free agent. We don't have to hang out with Larry Brooks very often, so maybe he'd behave. I'm kidding.
Well, didn't he say that he's retiring?
I don't know. Who cares? Fuck that guy.
We're going to ruin the joke, Kyle.
Fuck you. What was the question?
Andrew Ladd, big guy, 30 years old.
No.
Nah, he's talked openly about wanting to go back to Chicago for a discount, so he's looking for a winner.
Yuri Hitler.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sean Michael Lyles, Troy Brower.
The irony of Yuri Hitler being considered sloppy seconds is just kind of, it's not lost on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about give Jaromir Jagr a 1 year deal?
I read a report that they're close on another deal, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll stick in Florida.
He's going to stay there. Why would anybody want to leave?
Luke Shen, 26 years old, about to be a UFA. He's terrible, but he's a defenseman.
No.
Yeah, they already got one one disappointing defenseman blocking the kids already, and they've signed him for another 8 years. So
yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if like any of these like kind of weird out of the blue moves happen, because that's just what Ken Holland has been doing. But yeah, I'm not excited about this free agent class, and I would just as soon not playing it as well.
Yeah.
So let's see. Moving on. MD Ra 12 wants to know your favorite Red Wings draft since 2010. So I guess that doesn't include. So okay, 2011 was Yurko, Ouellet, Sproul, Tverdin, Marchenko.
2014.
Is that the Larkin year?
Yeah. Larkin and Axel Holmstrom.
Yep.
2013 gave us Mantha and Bertuzzi.
I still say 2014. Oh, so and it might end up being 2015 next year. Who knows? Because I really like Svechnikov and I really like Sarah Jarvi. So.
I'll go with 15 as well, because like Joran van Pottelberg, because that's a great name. It's probably Joran.
It is Joran.
Yeah, sure. Matt.
I'll go with 2011, because we drafted Alan Quine, and now he's playing for the Islanders.
It's funny to me, the people who have brought up Alan Quine as some sort of failure of Ken Holland, when, honestly, I bet you a month ago, people, 90% of Red Wing fans forgot that Alan Quine was a Red draft pick.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Alan Quine, like, completely. I knew that he was a draft pick, but until he scored that goal for the Islanders in the first round, I was like, oh, my God, I forgot about this dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he scored one overtime goal, and all of a sudden it's, oh, look, there goes the system again. Like, right. He was terrible. So, whatever.
Bill H. brings us back down to earth. Holland and Blashill say they want to help players improve. Since most of the players have regressed in 2015-16, what specifically has gone wrong with this concept of helping players play better? What is Blashill going to do to help players improve next season? Obviously, he can't be doing the same things he's done this season.
Well, I would hope that he's giving the right players more ice time and the right players less ice time. That'd probably be a start.
You know, part of it is some of the players regressed, I think, due to age. You know, the veteran players, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Cronwall. I mean, I think there's just a natural age regression that's going to happen with those players. I'm going to guess that Bill is talking specifically about Nyquist and Tatar, because those are the players that they're kind of the poster children for the players didn't get better this year. I think a large part of it stems from the lack of success on the power play. Because if you look at Tatar Nyquist's 5-on-5 production, it was pretty close last year to what it it's been in their career. The difference was, like, the year before, Nyquist had 12 or 13 power play goals. Tatar had a bunch of power play goals. They didn't score in a power play this year. So I think their overall numbers didn't look as good. And I do believe that the power play was a big reason why that, you know, kind of those, that those objective numbers don't look as strong. I also think the tinkering of the lines made a difference earlier in the season, where everybody was kind of playing with everybody. And, yeah, I mean, I know that we kind of look at statistics and say, well, you know, players doing this or players doing that. The players who are actually playing do believe in things like line chemistry and some of those intangibles that we can't measure. The players, it makes them better players for whatever reason. It's just one of those things you just can't explain. And if they are constantly having to adjust to new line mates, it can be difficult for them to kind of adjust. So what is Blashill going to do? Yeah, give the right players more ice time, but give the players, some of the forwards, some players that will complement what their skills are on the ice, and playing them together through some bad times. Let them play through some struggles to see if they can kind of work through them and then get back to where you think they should be producing.
I think that's a good take, yeah.
Todd P. Livingston wants to know, and Graham kind of touched on this, how much of a factor do you think Larkin's presence had on messing up Nyquist and Tatar, if at all?
What?
I mean, I guess, I don't know. You know, at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, if that messed Nyquist and Tatar up, then fucking trade Nyquist and Tatar. Like,
yeah, I mean, the only thing I could say is that Nyquist kind of lost his spot with Zetterberg at the beginning of the year. But if Nyquist is as good as we believe he is, he shouldn't have to have that kind of center to be able to produce at his career average.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think one player should mess up both two players' production. Like, that just seems asinine to me.
All right. What do you think our D will look like in October? Asked MT Coat. Oh, it's like a jacket without an owner. MT Coat. Sorry. It's a dumb joke. What do you think our D will look like in October?
Short, shriveled, and always to the left.
I was sitting here trying to come up with something like low and lazy.
I don't know.
It's I mean, you know, the players that were there are going to be there. I think Brendan Smith gets traded.
Wow.
I think I think they're going to trade him. I think he has value. And I think that I think I'm going out as a total bold prediction. Should write it down now. I think Jensen makes a team.
All right. Yeah. Smith could get traded. I don't know if I'd be happy with that, but I guess it just depends on what turns. This is a question that really needs to be answered after free agency, in my opinion.
It's just, I don't think that there's like enough space. We're gonna get like one new face in.
Yeah,
it's like, gonna be Cronwall, Erickson. It's gonna be DeKaiser, Smith. It's gonna be Marchenko and Jensen, Ouellette,
Green, and
Green. Yeah. So,
Do you guys ever think that maybe Green ends up traded? Because I've been thinking about that. I, honest to God, have been thinking.
It's I think Green is a deadline rental sell.
Well, yeah, that's what it would end up. Well, you know. Yeah. But I think he might end up traded. But I don't know.
Maybe in the last year of his contract. I could see that more than this coming season. Because he's still got that one more year at that $6 million hit. So, I mean, possibility, you never know. I mean, you know, you look at Justin Schultz getting traded from Edmonton. He actually looks pretty good in Pittsburgh now because he's been kind of removed from a situation where he had a lot of expectations. Maybe, I don't think Green had that many expectations, but
he still looks pretty bad.
Maybe you can. Yeah, but he doesn't look. He can be more sheltered.
Yeah, he can
be sheltered. So maybe that's what happens to Green. Who knows? Maybe they trade him back to Washington. Kind of funny.
I think Detroit's blue line core has no faces that we have not seen in the organization. I think that Grand Rapids defensive core looks fairly different because with Ouellette, Jensen, and Sproul all out of options next year, but Marchenko basically wasn't a Griffin anyway, so
yeah, whatever.
But like, add in Hicketts and Saariarvi, so I don't know. I think that's what's going to be Holland getting aggressive at the draft. Is I think he's going to trade a decent number of defensive prospects for, I don't know, probably for more picks. Swede wants the cup. Excludes Fedorov in this, but says if you could bring back one of the Russian five in their prime to help us move forward next year, who would it be? And he also said what current players would be on his line.
Well, I'd bring back Konstantinov.
Yeah, you'd bring back a defense.
Yeah, that's the first one I'd say is Konstantinov.
Konstantinov, and you'd pair him with, my God, who cares?
I mean, yeah, really.
He'd immediately make every defense pairing. If we're talking in his prime, he'd make every defense
pairing. I'd pair him with Green.
Smith, Konstantinov.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
A close second for me would be Larionov.
Yeah, that'd be my
second. Yeah, it would help the center depth.
Yeah.
Number.
I don't know. And the funny thing is I almost want to say Fetisov instead of Konstantinov because I think that the way hockey has changed has not necessarily changed to benefit the way Konstantinov played. I think that Konstantinov's mean ass would get him in a lot of trouble. Where Fetisov was always a much more cerebral, very calm. Like he really was a lot more like Lidstrom than I think that our memories give him credit for. Because by the time we got him, he was well past his prime, and so he was just kind of taking on the old man mentor role. But he was real, real good in the old days. So I don't know. I still think I might take Konstantinov because I liked him more. But it's a good question.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I like it.
All right. Yvette S19 wants to know if this is the worst elimination they've had in their 25-year playoff run.
No. Well, he said it was easily the most accepting he has been of a Wings playoff ouster.
Yeah, he said, but what was the worst playoff elimination you've experienced? Maybe outside of the Penn's final loss.
Yeah, they would definitely have to be outside of that Stanley Cup final loss.
The personal one for me was 93 because they lost to Toronto, and I was 14. So it was, I mean, that was just, it was a double whammy. Going to school the day after they lost was awful.
If I have to go recent memory, like, and I'm saying really recent, then I mean that one against the Bruins recently was really, that sucked. But really, honestly, the one before Lidstrom left, because right after that, it fucking sucked even more.
The one that hurt the most probably 96, because that team was like stupid stacked.
Yeah,
and that team should have rolled to the final, just like a hot knife through butter, and you know, it, I mean, they could barely eliminate Winnipeg in the first round that year, so.
I don't know. I think that Steve Yzerman skating off for the very final time after a real shitty series after losing hockey for the year to lockout was probably the most painful. Like, I didn't necessarily have, like, I mean, I had real expectations for that team. They were still in transition year, and it's like you watched Yzerman suffer basically through the entire season too, and then like they just like got to the first round, they really shit the bed, and then like he skates off into the sunset. That really hurt even more than, like, because the Pittsburgh thing I'm still shocked about it. I've never gotten over the shock, and there have been a lot of frustrating ones, but that was like probably as sad as I've been right up until I kind of got to the realization that we probably saw Datsyuk play his last game. So,
yeah.
If Datsyuk ends up leaving for sure, then this one will definitely might go up in the top.
Yeah, but like I said, like I had expectations for that Red Wings team. I was expecting the elimination this time.
Yeah, the team losing is not a shock. I mean, the player going is that sucks. Even with Lidstrom, I mean, losing to Nashville in hindsight, it didn't. It wasn't a huge spread. Losing in five was a huge shock, but I don't know. They all suck. They're all stupid.
Yeah, I hate them all.
Part two is, what is the worst reaction you or someone you've seen has had to a Wings elimination? I can admit to drunkenly breaking a few old dresser drawers after one of our many losses to the Sharks.
I stumbled on a door.
I've never done anything like that.
No. That was the 09 finals. It was after Talbot scored the second one. I stood up, and my daughter was still awake, and she was 2, and I had kind of made a deal that I wasn't going to swear in front of her. It was game 7 of the Stanley Cup final, so that willpower was kind of lacking.
Yeah.
So what I was going to do is I was going to go walk to my front door and quietly swear out the front door, just get it all out of my system and then come back. The problem was, as I was walking, I saw the door to my basement right there, and I just turned and cracked it. Went to the front door, just swore a little bit, turned around, and my wife was standing in the kind of the door, the hallway between kitchen and the hallway to the front door, and just had this look on my face, on her face, of, you are a fucking idiot, what did you just do? And I was still angry, so instead of being apologetic, I looked at her and said, what? So the joke I made is that I was suspended for 2 weeks after that incident, and she's like, do you think that's the example you want to set for your daughter? I said, I didn't wear in front of her, so yes. I didn't hold it in and hit a person. I hit an object. It's fine.
Well,
so that's probably the worst.
Mine would be it was the against the Sharks when the Sharks came back when we were up on them and we had their backs to the wall. I was currently working on the road with a friend who was a Sharks fan, and I remember we were up on them. We had 3 games, and we had won 3 games, and he's like, it's over, dude. And then a week later, there he is celebrating it. And I think I told him, like, oh, God, I said some terrible stuff to him, because he came up to me, and he's like, haha, sucks to suck, dude. And I was just like, and like, just blew a gasket. I was like, God, you know, fuck you and fuck your stupid life. And yeah, I said some really mean stuff, but it was okay because he was totally cool. He understood. It wasn't like I punched a door in my home.
I've never had an angry overreaction to a Red Wings elimination. I get it out during the regular season. I chucked a mouse across 2 rooms last year.
And what?
I chucked my mouse like across 2 rooms. Put a dent in the wall.
Over just, a regular season.
I remember when you're right.
It was a regular. The Christmas tree was up at the time. I was so mad at the team that.
Yeah. The Christmas tree was just really making me more angry.
I remember when they lost to the Flames in 04. I took my dog for a walk and spoke out loud. People must have thought I was crazy because I was just like, you fucking asshole, choking motherfuckers, can't win a fucking series against fucking Calgary. And said it all out loud the whole time and just walked my dog. And she probably was like, well, whatever.
Oh, the Rangers game on the last day of the season, I flipped over the ottoman and yelled, like, some real horrible thing.
Really?
Yeah. Jessica had taken all the kids out, so, like, oh, so I was the only one in the house. I thought the neighbors were going to call the cops on me, though. Okay. Yeah, that was the first Rangers goal. LA Wing says, Kenny says he won't trade Pavel's rights if it costs too much of the future. Do you think he would trade with Arizona for Pronger and then long-term injured reserve him, thus being able to buy out Pavel's contract? I don't get this question.
So I think the concept is he would trade,
flip-flop the contract.
Yeah, he would flip-flop the contracts knowing that Chris Pronger's would go off the books at some point, or it would go off the books because he's long-term injured reserve. I have a feeling that if that happened, the NHL would probably come down on it.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that the NHL would just come right down on it.
They should pull Pronger out of the Hall of Fame if they're going to do that.
Absolutely, they should. They should. Then they should fire him from the NHL, too.
I don't know, because that's more long-term injured reserve, and they've already they're already hitting up with Franzen being, he's going to be on long-term injured reserve. That's going to be quite a bit there. I don't think that's ideal. I mean, I would take it other than nothing, but sure, why not?
Well, and they got to be up against the cap for that, for you to remove the cap hit anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did kind of talk about this earlier, but Sim19 wants to know, with Granato gone and some slight speculation that Firstweiler might be getting the chop, any ideas who would be available to address the horrible issues of our defense and power play? Kyle already mentioned this, and I think it's absolutely true, because the Red Wings have talked about it, that they're talking about, you know, reorganizing what's going on behind the bench. It got said to MLive. I am absolutely convinced that Furschweiler is going to be the coach of the penalty kill next season and not the power play. And they're going to bring somebody else in. But yeah, like also like Kyle said earlier, I have no idea who. Adam Oates isn't coaching anywhere right now, and he ran a pretty good power play. You're not going to get Boudreaux behind the bench. He's going to end up in Ottawa as a head coach somewhere or somewhere else.
I mean, who else do you have out there? You have Mike Yao? No. It's just, you don't know. Adam Oates was mentioned in an article on NBC, whatever, which is whatever. It's not, don't take any stock into that. But I think that Adam Oates is pretty set right now because he has his own little firm going right now. So I don't think he's looking to coach.
No, but the thing about it is there's a lot of talk that they're going to want a guy with some experience because neither Blashill nor Furschweiler played in the NHL, so they're going to want a guy who probably has some playing experience back there or NHL head coaching experience just to kind of be that, again, that veteran presence behind the bench.
Wayne Gretzky.
There you go.
They'll just pick up Hitchcock after he fired by St. Louis.
I'd be fine with that, honestly.
I actually would be, too.
I'd be smitten with that.
They will work a deal with Yzerman because we all know that he is just a plant down in Tampa Bay who is willing to come back at the drop of a hat. What we're going to do is Yzerman is going to fire John Cooper, and he is going to come work for Blashill because they're best friends, right?
Yes, that sounds right. Or they will just they'll pull... here's a good one. They'll hire Steve Yzerman to be the GM, and then they'll put Ken Holland in a different position, and then Steve Yzerman will also run the power play. There you go.
Ken Holland runs the power play.
There you go. Now we're thinking. That would actually probably be awful.
Chris Draper runs the power play. Kirk Maltby. Mm-hmm. He scored 50 in juniors.
Thomas Holmstrom.
I'd actually be okay with that. Except everybody would be like, what the hell did he say? For sure.
You
get the puck in the zone, for net. Sure.
Yeah,
for
go sure. to net and go to net and tip puck in, for sure.
For sure. God, it's like every fucking Euro prospect ever. They always say for sure. So does Mantha. Mantha always says for sure. Before he says something and then after he says it.
I like for sure more than you know, because you know gets said a lot.
Yeah, you know, it does.
All right, that will end it for our questions in the mailbag, so I'm going to hand control back over to you.
All right. Great questions, as always. So looking around the league right now, as we speak right now, which it is May 2nd, 11:45 Eastern time, 10:45 fake time. If you...
Fuck you.
I mean...
Fuck no.
I know you guys always get your, you know, you always get in a bunch when I say that or anybody says that. But so Pittsburgh beat Washington tonight. It was the only NHL game on, and they now lead the series 2-1. I think that Washington's going to come back and win the next game. So, I mean, that was all that really happened tonight. Do you guys have any other thoughts about what might happen now that Chicago and Los Angeles are gone? I mean, everything's just gravy from here, right?
Yeah, it's like I'm pulling
except
for Dallas.
St. Louis. No St. Louis. I mean, that's really the one team I absolutely do not want to see win the cup is St. Louis. Other than that, yeah, I don't care.
You would take Pittsburgh winning a Stanley Cup over St. Louis?
Phil Kessel, yeah, you know, and here's the thing. It's a copycat league, right? Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh plays a little bit of a more wide open style, and they've kind of done that since they got Mike Sullivan as their coach. So maybe it would usher in a hey, this is, you know, because I mean Chicago has played that way, you know, they're a little bit more open. Maybe that would finally be this kind of usher in this era of, you know, you can allow your players to take chances and play more of an offensive style and not have to worry about just, you know, just locking everything down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said before, Chicago's gone, Los Angeles is gone. We're going to have a new Stanley Cup champion that we haven't seen in the last couple of years, so that's good. It's going to be exciting, I think, in any way we look at it. But if it comes down to two teams right now, I think I'd like to see San Jose or Washington win it. And that's the bottom line because... Kyle Wim said so.
You can smell it.
I feel like this is like a wrestling promo. Yeah, that's a wrestling promo. You just cut right there.
That's the joke, Graham.
Is that the joke?
That was the joke, yeah.
That's the joke. Whatever. Jesus fucking Christ. All right, so it's been a great show. Graham just ruined it, but I mean, whatever. No, I'm just kidding. As always, thank you for... No, I'm kidding. I love you. I think you're a very handsome young man. But anyways, I'll tell you about that after we end the show. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Hopefully throughout the summer we're gonna keep up on this as hopefully news stays hot and we can still talk about it. But as for Kyle, myself, Graham, and JJ, thank you so much, and we will talk to y'all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
In it. In it.